and Stoner heard in his mind his wife's urgent warning. Keith, they've launched 20 missiles.
They? Who?
6 from silos in the United States. The rest from submerged submarines in the Pacific and Indian Oceans.
Stoner pinned Janagar with a penetrating stare. Why? He demanded. The Indian's eyes were almost popping from his head.
Krishna, he muttered. Krishna, Krishna.
The technicians were bolting for the door, pushing one another in their maddened effort to get through the doorway and into the waiting van. No use, Stoner knew. They can't get far enough away before the bomb goes off. Grabbing the half-fainting Janagar by his shirt, Stoner probed deep into the man's mind and sensed the tumor growing in his brain, saw his history, the family that depended on him, the martyrdom he was willing to accept in order to provide for his wife and children. Clutching Janagar by the nape of his scrawny neck, Stoner said, "There's a better way." He dragged Janagar to the minivan, where the technicians were shoving one another to get into the vehicle. One of them had already revved up its engine and was starting to back out of the parking space, even though two of the techs, an Iranian and an American, Stoner saw, were still scrambling to get in through the sliding side door. Stoner killed the minivan's engine with a mental command as he dragged Janagar to the van. With his free hand, he pushed the two struggling technicians into the vehicle, while the driver, one of the Chinese, strained red-faced and sweaty to get the engine going again. With one hand, Stoner swung Janagar into the van, then surrounded it with a bubble of energy. Then he saw, off in the distance, a rooster trail of dust. The car's coming this way. Tavalera, he realized. Without hesitating, Stoner flung out a mental command. Raul, turn around, get away, back to the bunker, turn around now! Tavalera heard Stoner's shout in his mind. They're gonna blow the bomb, he yelled. Turn around, Stoner commanded, before it's too late. The flash seared Tavalera's eyes. He felt the shockwave of the explosion lift his minivan and toss it like a pebble, tumbling across the rough desert floor. The roar burst his eardrums. Blind and deaf, he felt the flash of searing heat boil his flesh, vaporize his bones. The pain lasted only an instant. Then he was dead. Stoner stood by the minivan's open door as the explosion engulfed him. The men inside the van screamed as the core of white-hot plasma enveloped the thin shell of energy that encased the vehicle. For an endless moment, it was like being in the heart of a star. Then the desert erupted as tons of dust and stones, scrubby plants, burrowing animals, were all instantly vaporized and lifted on a gigantic pillar of smoky fire and rose to the stratosphere.
Keith! Joe called. Keith!
We're all right, he answered. All around him the turmoil of doom churned and seethed, but the men inside the van were unharmed. Frightened as men who had seen hell firsthand, gibbering, shaking, but physically safe. Neither the heat, nor the blast, nor the radiation of the explosion penetrated the shield of energy that englobed the minivan. But Stoner's eyes saw beyond the chaos that surrounded him. Raoul, he thought, he tried to warn me. He tried to save me.
Keith, the missiles, Joe said. They're on track for China and Iran.
Stop them.
The children. They're not here. Kathy's in Egypt, and Rick's over Iran, where the missiles are heading.
You've got to stop those missiles, Joe. It's up to you.
I'm tracking them, she said.
They've got to be destroyed.
I'm trying.
The billowing cloud of dust and gas that surrounded the minivan was thinning now. The technicians inside the vehicle had gone silent, wide-eyed, frozen with terror and awe. Stoner turned to Janagar, kneeling just inside the van's sliding door, his whole body shaking violently. He grasped the Indian by his neck once again, calming him. You're not going to be a martyr after all, Stoner said calmly. Janagar could only stare, his mouth hanging open, unable to speak. Your tumor will be erased in a few hours. You will live for many years. You will see your grandchildren growing up around you. The clouds outside the energy shield were dissipating rapidly now. Stoner could see the New Mexico sunshine piercing through them. "Krishna," Janagar muttered, staring at Stoner. "You are the avatar of Krishna." Stoner didn't reply. Instead, he left Janagar huddled among the terrified technicians and walked around the van to the driver's door. "Slide over, please," he said in Mandarin to the shuddering Chinese behind the steering wheel. "I'll drive." As he started the engine, Stoner noted that not even the dust from the explosion had penetrated his energy shield. He didn't need to use the windshield wipers at all. "We're going back to the observation bunker," he said to the shock-stunned technicians. "There are a few things I want to say to your leaders there." Chapter 5. Streaking above the thin layer of Earth's atmosphere, 20 ballistic missiles rose on tongues of rocket flame, each headed for a target in Greater Iran or the People's Republic of China. From the starship riding in high orbit, invisible beams of energy lanced across thousands of kilometers of space and sliced into each and every one of the missiles. Each and every one of them exploded silently, raining debris down on the broad swath of deep blue ocean. "I got them," Joe exulted.
"Good shooting, Sheriff," Stoner replied.
"None of the warheads detonated," she reported. "I got the missiles before they armed themselves. The only explosion was there in the desert where you are."
Stoner was driving the minivan across the scrubby desert floor back toward the observation bunker, bouncing and squeaking across the denuded ground. For more than 3 kilometers from ground zero, the desert floor had been turned to glass by the heat of the explosion. Stoner was back on the old road now, after skidding and sliding across the glassy waste. The half-dozen technicians huddled in the van were utterly silent, stunned, dazed by their brush with nuclear death and their seemingly miraculous salvation. Janagar sat among them, wide-eyed with shock, and perhaps, Stoner thought, the beginnings of hope. In the rearview mirror, he saw the pillar of dirty smoke and dust that rose like a cloud of evil high into the clear blue sky. But he only glanced backward. He quickly snapped his attention to the road, searching for a sign, a scrap of the van Tavalera had been driving when the bomb went off. Nothing. The shock wave of the explosion had crushed the minivan. The star-hot intensity of the plasma cloud had vaporized the vehicle and the man who had been driving it. "Greater love hath no man than this," Stoner remembered from his childhood Bible classes, "that a man lay down his life for his friends." Tavalera. Raul Tavalera. Not even a scrap of his DNA remains. There's no way we can clone him, bring him back to life. Stoner felt sad, weary, frustrated by the finality of death. But as the minivan approached the observation bunker, a seething anger began to fill him. "Murderers," he snarled inwardly. "They tried to kill me. They were willing to kill these technicians and this poor, frightened, bewildered Hindu. They killed an innocent instead." When he reached the observation bunker, he stopped the minivan with a squeak of brakes and a swirl of dust, killed the engine, and then hopped down to the ground. Without waiting for the technicians, he yanked open the bunker's steel door and strode into the room full of politicians. The chamber was in chaos. They were all talking, yammering, hollering at once. The President of the United States was standing at the front of the room, a pair of giant display screens behind him showing the mushroom cloud of the explosion dissipating into the clear New Mexico sky. A trio of contrails traced across the blue. Planes from a nearby airbase scrambled because of the nuclear blast, Stoner presumed. The President was shouting, red-faced, his arms raised above his head in righteous anger. The Iranians and Chinese were on their feet, screaming at each other. Archbishop Overmyer sat off to one side, soaked with perspiration and looking pale, drained. Sister Angelique stood beside him. She looked up at Stoner, and her eyes went wide with shock.
"Be quiet!" Stoner bellowed.
They went right on yelling at one another.
"Shut the fuck up, all of you!"
Immediately they all fell silent, unable to utter a sound. They stared wildly around the room, several of them reaching for their suddenly muted throats.
"Sit down," Stoner commanded.
Slowly, staring uncomprehendingly at him, the politicians took their chairs.
"That's better," Stoner said,
freeing them to speak once again. But they still sat mutely.